Boker Tov, good morning everybody. Thank you for taking the time to come. Thank you for learning together. We're learning today. Our series is Who's Asking the Question? Trying to understand the goals of different Torah commentators. And today's learning is sponsored by the grandson of Rashi in honor of his Yahrzeit. Rashi's Yahrzeit is today. Thank you, Eliezer, 29th of Tammuz. And so we're learning about his grandson, the Rashbam, on his yard side. So we're going to take a little time to appreciate this, folks. Be prepared. This is just it keeps getting so much more wonderful as we continue to learn. Most people don't spend the time taking the appreciation of the methodology of what's going on and what we're learning, why we learn it, who we turn to when we're learning it, and what their ideas are. So we spend a lot of time on the Targum and Rashi. To a large degree, a lot of people have a sense of where they turn to Targum and Rashi, but a lot of people have no idea what's going on in the Rashbam. So the Rashbam, just to appreciate this, is that Rashi had daughters. He had three daughters. And he was blessed with a number of grandsons. One of his daughters had four sons. And among those sons were two people we know very well. Their names were Yaakov and Shmuel. Yaakov ultimately became Rabbeinu Tam. He was known as Rabbeinu Tam, obviously from the appellation given to Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov Ish Tam. And the other one was Shmuel, who became later known as the Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel, right? And the Rashbam has many appellations, many credits to his name, but nothing less than the fact that the Rashbam actually continued Rashi's commentary on the Gemara. So when Rashi passes away in Bava Basra and in Psachim, it's his grandson, the Rashbam, who continues his Pirush. So when you learn the last Perek of Psachim, which many people do around Pesach, Arei Psachim, you're learning the Rashbam on the Gemara. When you learn anything past Cheskas Abatim, which is where the Daf is holding right now, you are learning the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, as he continued Rashi's explanation, which actually puts the Rashbam as one of the leading Tosfos, one of the leading people of the leaders of the Tosfos Academy. He also lived, like Rashi, in northern France. He lived in an area called Rama Rapt. I'm not sure if that's the correct pronunciation. It is very close to Troy, which is where Rashi grew up. Northern France seems to be a favorable economic and social space for Jewry, at least for this moment in time, which is why we have the settlement of Jews in this area. There are those who argue that he raised sheep and wine and grapes. And he is a remarkable interpreter. He wrote a pirush on all of Tanakh. Unfortunately, we only have most of his writings on the Torah section of Tanakh, so we don't have his writings later on, but it seems clear that he wrote on all of it, and he is quoted many, many times in Tosfos independently of his Pirush, just as the fact that he is one of the individuals in these academies which were essentially trying to synthesize Talmud. They were trying to synthesize all of the Talmudic corpus of literature to work together, and that was what they were trying to achieve. So what is the Rashbam doing? The Rashbam is doing something quite unique, and his methodology is something which lasts with us till today. So remember that his grandfather, Rashi, with whom he learned, right? Imagine having a chavrusa with grandpa who is Rashi. That's a very significant opportunity. So Rashi did something remarkable, which the Rashbam continues. And that is if you remember when we learned a little bit last week, Rashi says that when I look at the verse, when I look at the pasuk, I'm going to try to find an interpretation which is davar davur al ofanov, which is something, as Rashi explains numerous times in his pirush, something which fits, something which balances, something which makes sense in the context of things. And oftentimes Rashi would use that as a clarifying principle as to which midrash Rashi will choose to interpret the verse with, right? So if there's multiple options of Midrashim, Rashi will choose the one which fits mostly with the way that the pasuk works. That's generally understood. However, we saw that Rashi, and that generally speaking, most of Rashi is quoting Chazal, as we saw. But he's quoting the Chazal, which will synthesize the and be, so to speak, most connected to what he understands is the balanced way of reading the Torah within the context of the Pesukim. However, we saw, and there are many times, where Rashi will actually diverge from the Chazal itself. So we saw, we took a look at an example, where Rashi quotes at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, the interpretation of Chazal, which is, Ushmi Hashem lo nadati lohem, and Chazal explaining that there's differences in the names of Hashem. There's the Shem Shakai and the Shem Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, Shem Avaya, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacted with the Avos with the name Shakai, and he interacted with Moshe with the name Shem Havaya, and he was complaining that Moshe Rabbeinu, with more of a, so to speak, deeper understanding of Hashem, was questioning his practices. So Rashi rejects that, saying it doesn't make sense on a number of grounds. And one of the most basic grounds was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacted with Avram Avinu in the Bris Ben Abisarim with the Shem Havaya. Right, Hashem uses that name there. So Rashi says it cannot mean what Chazal say. And therefore, I would suggest it just means is that the Avos had promises without fulfillments. You've started to see fulfillments and you're still questioning me. That's the way Rashi does, which means that Rashi was prepared to ask questions to try to understand the text on its own basis. And most of the time was able to find a Midrash that would fit into that space, that would explain it in the way that was what he would be in line with what's called Pshutoi Shel Mikra. But sometimes Rashi would diverge. It is in that sometimes space that his grandson lives. The Rashbam would do the same thing as Rashi, but almost always would be prepared to say what is going on in this pasuk independent of Chazal and try to understand how to answer it based on simply the tools he has in front of him. Let's take a look at the Rashbam. Now, something to bear in mind is that the French-German commentators, the Ashkenazic world, did not have the practice of writing introductions. We will see that in the Spanish world of interpreters, right? So when you look at the Ibn Ezra, the Khuzari, the Ramban, they all have introductions, so they explain themselves. Rashi, the Rashbam, don't. As an example, there's no introduction to Rashi. There's no introduction to the Rashbam. However, there are moments in time where they will elaborate as to what they're doing. So there's a number of places where the Rashbam does this. As an example, the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, in the interpretation of the first pasuk, in the middle of that interpretation, the Rashbam does point out the following observation in source 2. He says, Yavinu hamaskinim ki kol divrei rabosenu v'dor sheihem, Kainim v'amitim. What's the word kainim mean? Kainim anachnu, right? Right, today in Israel, if you want to say yes, the affirmative, you say ken. It comes from this word, but it actually is much more profound than the word yes, I'm going to buy the soda, right? It means true, right? The words of our sages are true and amitim. V'zeu ha'amur b'meseches Shabbos havina bar tamnei sari shanin. The Gemara tells us that they analyzed it for 18 years, and they made the assessment that the verse never leaves its pshutoi, its simple, basic meaning. So he points out that there is, with Chazal being true, and with their drashas being MS, at the same time, they also acknowledged that there is a mikra yotze mitzei pshuto, which means they themselves gave the license to there being an independent reality called pshat, and I'm going to live with those two things at once. Which me, and therefore he gives an example, the Torah says, which is where he's commenting on, and Chazal tell us in Menachos Dav Chav Tes, that what does it mean? Be'avraham, right? Or Be'hebera'am, as an example. Meaning, it was with the context of the intention of Avraham, or with a hey, the world is created, right? And he says, Ato'afaresh, Pirusha Rishonim Pa'pasuk Zelo Adia Livnei Adam, Loma Lo Ro'isi Lefaresh Kamosam. And I'm going to explain to you why I don't think that is the Pshuta Shal Mikra. That is a drash, right? Behabraham or Ba'avraham, when you switch around the letters, and the hay is small, right? So, but the point is that I don't think that is what the basic meaning of the Torah is conveying, and that what they said is true. Okay, so now you say, okay, I can live with that, right? Meaning, I can live with the fact that Behibaram, Behabaram, that Hashem created this world with a hay and the next world with a yud. That's the Gemara in Menachos. I can accept that being true, and then also being, this just being a description of, while creation was going on, this is what's happening, which is what the Rashbam is going to say. I can live with those two channels. It's going to get more complex. So let's dig a little deeper. The other place that the Rashbam reflects upon his methodology is at the beginning of Vayeshev. The way that the Rashbam looks at things, and this already is a divergence from the way that his grandfather does things, is that Rashi is interpreting the Pasuk. The Rashbam will often interpret the sections. Okay, so we start moving outwards. As we move later in interpretation, we also move to longer vistas, broader horizons. Now, Rashi, of course, is taking that into context, but the Rashbam will also view larger sections. So as an example, the Rashbam breaks up Bereshis into sections of Toldos, meaning every time it says Eile Toldos, which happens a number of times, the Rashbam understands the beginning of a new chapter in Jewish or in Hebrew history. These are Ivrim, there's no Jews at this point, right? Into a different stage of history. So why is Parshas Vayeshev a critical point? Because that's where it says Eile Toldos Yaakov Yosef, which means he has a new chapter in Israelite history, and he's going to explain, why do we need this chapter? So in that moment, now this is where the Rashbam does this. By the way, everybody quotes this Rashbam, but they don't know why he's here. This is you have to read the full continuum of this point to appreciate this. Here is what he says. So he says, and this is the most critical Rashbam that everybody quotes. But let's appreciate this, because in it lives, I would call, almost a quantum enigma. Okay, and we'll try to appreciate what's being said here. Ele told us Yaakov, Yaskilu v'yavinu ohavei seichel, mashilimdunu raboseinu. Those who love intellect, those who love ideas, should listen to what our rabbis taught us. Now, already there, you have a contradiction in different groups. Do you notice that? There are those who are ohavei seichel, those who love intellect, those who are willing to ask questions, and then the words of the rabbis, which means, by the way, which is tradition, okay? The traditional way of interpreting. Now, some people would make a wedge between these, right? There's antiquity, there's the old, and there's the new, and there and never shall the twain meet. Notice Rashbam is explaining that the tradition holds the key to those who are asking questions which haven't been answered necessarily, right? So just appreciate this. They are going to live together. It says, Ki ein mikra yotzei midei pshutai. Quoting Chazal in Shabbos, which is the one he quoted before in Bereshis, that a verse never leaves, meaning there's still value in the Pshutoi. Af ki ikara shel Torah ba'o lelamdenu o lehodienu b'remizas hapshat v'agados v'alachos v'adinim al yedei arichus haloshon v'al yedei shloshtam, shloshim shtayim midos shel Rabbi Eliezer b'no shel Rabbi Yossi Aglili v'al yedei shloshim shtayim midos shel Rabbi Shmuel. Even though the main point of the Torah is to convey the intent of Chazal, which oftentimes will be in Agada and Halacha, we'll have to analyze those separately, and Halacha as determined by the hermeneutical principles. I love all these words which don't mean anything to us in English, right? But nonetheless, the principles of derivation, as we read every day, Rabbi Shmuel is one of the examples of the 13 Midos Shatara Nidreshes Bohem, and that's the Ikar, which means I will act based on what Chazal told us is the Halacha, and that's what it is. He says, "Varishoni mitoich chasidusom nisasku lintois acharei hadrashos shem ikar." And the early ones. Now, when we say the Rishonim, we refer to the medieval commentators, of whom the Rashbam is one. So he's not referring to himself. Meaning, everybody who says Rishonim refers to people before him. So he's saying, up till now, which probably refers to the last 700 years, because the Gemara has been closed around the year 500, and the Rashbam is living now 600. Right, the next is 600 to 700 years later. So you're saying in that interim, the primary focus has been, because of the Chassidusam, has been working with Chazal's interpretation of the Pesukim, based on Agada and Halacha. There's a Midrash Agada, Midrash Halacha. He says, and therefore they did not allow themselves to actually ask about the Pshuta Shemikra. Now, by the way, I love this phraseology. I think people pass over this all the time. Is the umkoi shel pshuta shel mikra. Umkoi means the depth. Usually people would say pshat is two-dimensional and drash is deeper, right? Drash is, we usually even use the word deeper, right? But he understands that pshat, in fact, is deeper because perhaps truer, maybe, to the interpretation of the verse, right? But there's a depth of, and we're going to see some of the profundity of the depth of pshat, which is about to reveal to us. The Gemara in Brachas tells us that you should not spend too much time learning Higayon, which, as interpreted by the Ashkenazic tradition, his grandfather Rashi refers to Mikra, right? As opposed to, let's say, Rav Sadia Gaon interpreting this Gemara in the Iraq area as being philosophy. Okay, so meaning don't spend too much time on the Mikra, which is why people weren't spending so much time in this. The Gam Amru Ha'Oseb Mikra Mida Ve'Ena Mida. And those who say that it's actually more beneficial to spend time in the Talmud than it is to spend time on the Mikra, of whom, by the way, his brother championed this idea. So Rabbeinu Tam, in interpreting the Gemara of dividing one's time thrice, to divide it between Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud, Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosafot says, Talmud, in fact, incorporates all three of them, which becomes the psak of the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch about how one spends one's time, as opposed to the original Gemara, which interpreted by and paskin by Rav Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch is traditionally 3-3-3, right? Is 33% of one's time. Meaning that this is what the practice was, which is why people did not allow themselves into this new vista of interpretation called Pshuto Shel Mikra. And then he quotes the Gemara Shabbos. Avinu ba tamni sari shnin v'garsinan kula talmuda v'loy hava yodana da'i mikra yodei midei pshutai. After spending 18 years of studying the Talmud, the Gemara itself says, after all this, we'll call it intellectual work through the Talmud, we still come out with the fact that the psukim have their own understanding, which is pshutai. And now he comes to the crowning comment, which is the most famous comment of the Rashbam, which everybody knows this comment. And he says the following. He says, the Gam Rabbeinu Shlomo, and Rabbeinu Shlomo, who's that? Rashi. Avi imi meir einei gola, who was the one who opened the eyes of the exile. Shepirish Torah Neviim Uksavim wrote his comment on Tanakh. Nosan leim lefaresh pshuto shel mikra. He paid attention to interpreting the pshutai. V'af ani Shmuel bar Rebbe Meir chosno zecher tzadik livracha, and I, Rabbeinu Shmuel, the son of Meir, his son-in-law, nisvakachti imoy, I argued, I worked with Rashi, my grandfather, v'lefonav v'hoideli she'ilu hoya loy panai, hoya tzorich la'asoyz pirushim acherim lefi hapshatoyz hamischadshim b'chol yom. Rashi himself said, if I had more time, I would have spent more time working on what you are working on, your thesis, which is interpreting the Mikra'os lefi pshuto shel mikra. That's what Rashi agreed to him in conversation. He's reporting about his grandfather. And then he says, v'ato yiru amaskilim mashi pirusha rishonim, and I'm going to jump off onto at this terminus now to explain. So this is the Rashbam over here. So Rashbam is doing something which is quite remarkable. Now, I had wanted today to go through Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra at the same time. And then I realized there's no way. Because they are actually starting from a similar point and ending up very different, even though people put them into the same box. And so I'd like to interpret, let's take a moment to appreciate the Rashbam on his own terms, and next week to appreciate what Ibn Ezra is doing and why they diverge. They're trying to do a similar thing, and they're ending up at different ends. And it's going to be theologically very different, halachically very different as well. What the Rashbam is doing over here is the Rashbam is telling us that it is all right to live with Chazal and the Pshutoi at the same time, which means that we can have multiple frequencies of ideas actually emerging from the Torah at the same time. I'm all right, says the Rashbam, I'm living with the Umko Shel Pshuto Shel Mikra and the Drashos of Chazal, which are Kenim and Amitziyim, which are true, and I can live with them at the same time. And that means to say that even when they themselves are not compatible with each other, it seems. That means multiple interpretations coexisting. The Ibn Ezra is not going to do this. The Ibn Ezra is going to do a convergence. Okay, we'll get there, Bezra Hashem, next time. And that's going to be more complex. Okay, but this is actually divergence. It's all right living in this realm. Let's take a few examples, because otherwise this just seems like a theory. So trying to get a sense of the general methods the Rashbam is using. Generally speaking, the Rashbam is going to ask similar questions to what motivated Chazal in most cases, but he's going to try to interpret it with what he has in front of him, which is the psukim and context itself, without introducing any other traditions or interpretations externally. So let's take a look at this. So for instance, the Rashbam will oftentimes talk about common practice. So on page 3, source 4, the Torah describes that Yaakov Avinu is now in a vehement argument with his father-in-law, Lavan. Lavan has caught up with them, and Yaakov is trying to now make a case for his honesty over the last 20 years of service of his father-in-law. And he says, Zeh esrim shana anachi imrach, rechelecha vizecha lo shikelu ve'ele tzonecha lo ishachalti. There was never miscarriages among your flock, and I never ate your flock.
That's good. You didn't steal.
Very good. that's a commendable thing to say. So why is Yaakov saying that? You're like, why is that something he's bringing up? Is I didn't steal from you. I didn't eat your flock. So Rashbam says very simply. He says, Derech Roeitzon Bamidbar Leechol Mirakvasim Azucharim. It was conventional practice that the Roeh would eat part of the flock. That was part of the payment. That was part of the convention. In the same way that the Torah says later on that this is a halacha, is those who are picking from the orchard are allowed to eat from the orchard. They can't put it into their bags, but they can eat, right? That's part of the service. This was then what was the practice, which means that Yaakov Avinu is saying it's laudable that I didn't do what was common practice. I packed my own lunch. That's what that Yaakov Avinu was essentially saying. I went above and beyond. Which means, says the Rashbam, and you'll see the number of times the Rashbam will say this, is you'll interpret things in the context of what must have been the common practice at the time. This was. Now, whether that's true at the time of the Rashbam in northern France, I don't know. I've not researched the common practices in northern France to know if that was. But he's saying at the time that the Torah was talking, at the time Yaakov Avinu certainly was talking, this is the common practice, right? So it's a question which emerges from the text. And one of the ways he interprets it is practice at the time, which is, right, this is not a drasha, this is simply what we'll call derech ha'olam, or derech eretz, at the time. Another example is repetition. We saw, let's jump in straight into it. So when Yaakov gives a bracha to his firstborn son, you may question whether it's a bracha, because it's a complicated, it's not such a bracha. He says, Reuven b'chori ata koichi reishis oini, you're my strength in the beginning and the beginning of my on. My strength, yeser sa'esri, yeser oz. Very beautiful. And Rashi goes on to explain what each of those words mean. Right? What is on, what is koach, right? So Rashi goes on to explain that. Rashbam says, kochiv reshis oni, yeser sa'esri, yeser oz. There's a lot of strength in that pasuk, right? Do you see that? So the Rashbam will say, dibur echad hu. It's one idea that he's conveying to us. Derech hamikros lichpol es divrehem. That it is the way of the verses to double their expression, Okay, so what that means to say is that the Torah is speaking, or in this case, Yaakov is speaking, like human beings speak, right? And there's a certain poetic element to the way they speak. So just like, you know, sometimes academics will say this and like sort of dismiss the text or dismiss Chazal. The Ibn Ezra is not dismissing, the Rashbam is not dismissing it, but he's just pointing out that there's a certain poetic cadence to the Torah itself. Like, people don't even appreciate this. So when we say, Mi kamoicha ba'ilim Hashem, Mi kamoicha ne'edar ba'kodesh noreh silas o'sefere, that's called in poetry what's called a staircase parallelism. Right? A, B, A, C. Right? So that's rather Mi kamoichas. That happens all the time in the Torah. So what the Rashbam is saying is the Torah talks like this. People talk like this. Right? Therefore, you don't necessarily have to worry about explaining every word as to what its significance is in that sense, because that's right. This is the way that it was spoken. Similarly, We'll have, when Yaakov Avinu is having this altercation with Esav, Yaakov Avinu is cooking the lentil soup. His brother comes from the field and he says, give me from this adoim, adoim azeh, give me from this red stuff. Right? So says the Rashbam, similarly, he says in source 9, min adoim adoim azeh, derech adam hamemaher lishol mechavero kofel es devarov. A person who's in a hurry will often repeat themselves. Right, so it's an indication of a person who is in a behala, a person who's in a state of a confusion. Why? Because they're in a rush. This is reflecting the mood. It's reflecting the movement over here in the pasuk as well. Now, remember that we looked at last time Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel and their willingness, Rabbi Akiva saying that every word needs to be interpreted. And we said that Rashi went with that. The Rashbam seems to go more in the realm of Rabbi Shmuel, which is Dibra Torah, Kaloshin B'nei Adam. That sometimes the Torah will speak in the way that people speak, because after all, we are the audience. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us, and therefore, repetition is taken less severely in the Rashbam, because it's reflecting certain things. In fact, by the way, you want to take this further, as interpretive generations go further, the Sforno will say is that Esav is a person who is less conscious of detail. He's less precise. He just looks at bigger things without, right? That's also expressed in this Adam, Adam, Azeh. Right? Just this stuff, this red stuff. Ibn Ezra says that Rashbam is saying it is because of Rash as well. Similarly, trying to interpret things internally as well. So within the context. So for instance, when this is a very, very famous Chazal and divergence from it. So for instance, when it describes the luminaries on day 4 in creation, looking at these, it says the pasuk has an internal contradiction, which is where it says Vayas Elokim es shnei ha'maoros ha'gadolim. Hashem made these two great luminaries, es ha'maor ha'gadolim mimsheles hayom, es ha'maor ha'katolim mimsheles ha'layla, the big one for the night, the day, and the small one for the night. So internally, there's a contradiction. Are they both big, or is one big and one small? So we are, of course, seasoned and habituated to interpreting based on Chazal, because we learned Rashi, and that is that there is two luminaries. There's a complaint lodged, as the Goran Cholin tells us, by the moon against the sun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu diminishes the moon, and that in Chazal's description, the Rashbam says, I don't need to go there. Says the Rashbam, so simply, look at the Rashbam in Source 12, Katan Mishnei Hamar Ois HaGadolim, which means, what does it mean, Hamar Katan? The smaller of the two. There are two great luminaries. I look up at the sky and there are two bright lights in the sky, bigger than all of the stars around me. And they're both big, and one of them is slightly bigger. Now, by the way, just for the sake of appreciation, the moon is 400 times closer to the earth than the sun, but happens to also be 400 times smaller than the sun as well, right? So how does that work? The ratio of distance to size is the same, which is why when we look at a solar eclipse, the moon almost completely, except for the corona, covers the entire disk of the sun, which means that from the human perspective, they are Shnei HaMaoros HaGadolim, by the way, right? So from our perspective, they are the same, right? If you watch the solar eclipse, they are exactly, almost identically the same. But there happens to be one is big and one is small, which is what the pasuk is saying. But what the Rashbam is saying is it's possible to view the pasuk within its own terms without going to Chazal. Now, is he dismissing Chazal? What does he do with Chazal? But the point is, he's clearly diverging from this Chazal. We'll see what he does with Chazal in a few moments. Similarly, another example is it describes what we're getting a chance to do a survey of all of the stories in Tanakh as we go through this as well. Yishmael is taken out to the desert. He's kicked out of the home with his mother, Hagar. Hagar is the second time Hagar has essentially been thrown out of the house. And they finish the water. They're in the desert, and her son's about to die. So what does she do? She leaves him under a bush, and he cries. She cries. She doesn't want to see him die. And then it says, "Vayishmael Elokim es kol anar, vayikra malach Elokim mina el agar mina shemaim, vayomer lo malach Hagar al tiri ki shema Elokim es kol anar ba'asher usham." Hakadosh Baruch Hu has listened to the voice of the lad as he is there. What does it mean, Basher Usham? Clearly is there. He's always there. There is just where you are, right? I'm always here. That's just the way it is. He's always there, right? So what does it mean he's over there? So Rashi says a very, very famous idea, which is an idea which requires a lot of thought, which is by Asher Hashem, is that the angels came along and said, listen, in the future, there's going to be this religion which is going to be based in the Arab world, and they're going to want to really do terrible things, and they're going to threaten horrible things against the Jewish people. But whereas the Shiites or the Sunni, and there's going to be a lot of real problems. Like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now's the time, just Sheva Al Taseh, let him die, and there'll be a lot less problems in the world. Says, and the Chazal say no. But Asher Hashem means we're going to listen to him as he is now, and as he is now, he's not committed all the atrocities that are going to be done in the future as well. Le'Basher Hashem. That's what Chazal say, which, by the way, is something which requires a lot of thinking, because we do have another principle in the Torah, which is based on the Ben Sorer Umore later on in Parshas Kiseitse, where Chazal and Seh explain that why can you kill this preteen, this adolescent young man, based on actions which don't seem to be yet warrant a death penalty. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, as in interpreting that, is Yamos Zakai Va'al Yamos Chayav, let's make sure he doesn't get to right now he's stealing for his habits. He's going to steal for much more complicated habits later on. So that requires synthesization. That's why you go to the Maharal, whose Gurariya's explanation on Rashi, because he's interpreting this Rashi. Okay, just to understand, the Maharal was not writing on the Torah. The Maharal was writing on Rashi. Okay, it's called a super commentary, as there were many on Rashi. But the Rashbam says, we don't need that. The Rashbam sidesteps the same question, why do we need Ba'asher Hashem? But he sidesteps the bike saying, very simply, Ba'asher Hashem, Lefi Shaloi Hoya, Shaloi Hoysa Roy Oysa, she could not see where he was. Why? Sharei Nisrach Kome Oysa Makom, because she had distanced herself from the bush under which she was lying. Hutzrach Loima Ba'makom Asher Hashem, Nosan Loya Samayim. Meaning, go, run back. There's water, go to where he is, right? Which means, by the way, but this picture over here, of Hagar over the boy is incorrect, right? According to the Rashbam, because she's not right there. She's not over the lad. She left him, right? Kimetachai v'keshes, right? So that means to say that's what the Rashbam would say. Again, this is within the pasuk itself. They may lay the interpretation in assuming what's going on without having to introduce other future information, like Rashi is saying, Ba'asher Hashem in the future, or without introducing a side conversation or a theological conversation between sun and moon and their goal in their identity or future, what their roles are as well. Similarly, like premonitions as well, the Rashbam will also, this is a very famous idea the Rashbam will say, is that many parts of the Torah will give us clues about the future of the Torah as well, about what's going to happen in the future. And that is so as an example, and this is a remarkable idea which he explains in many places. He says in his section at the beginning of Bereishis in Source 16, Ach zeu ikar pshutoy lefi derech hamikrais shiargil lahakdim ulefaresh davar she'ein sorech bishvil davar haniskar lefanav b'makom acher. The Torah will say something which right now has no meaning, but will have meaning later on in the story, which is giving us the fact that there's something more that's about to happen. As an example, he gives Shem Cham v'Yefes, and it says V'Cham hu avi Kanan. The Torah tells us that we have three sons of Noach, and Noach's one son has another son called Kanan. We don't need Kanan at that point in time. So the Rashbam explains, well, that's because in the future we're going to know a little bit about Kanan. Kanan had a little bit of a difficult circumstance with his grandfather, so the Torah is telling us, put a memo here, understand that he's going to reappear. So a lot of times extra ideas in the psukim will be, so to speak, placeholders for future ideas. And you think this might be referring to just psukim, but it actually refers to larger ideas. Again, Rashbam looking in larger sections. So as an example, the Rashbam explains that why do we need to have Bereishis in the first place? A question which Rashi asks at the very beginning of his Pirush 2. Right, why do we need to have all of Bereishis up to HaKodesh HaZelachem? Rashi asks, and he's quoting Rabbi Yitzchak, right? Koyach Ma'asov Yigid Lamoy. Rashbam asks the same question, and he explains a remarkable idea, which is, he says, Gam kol ha-parsha in Source 17, Hazois shel meleches sheshes yomim higdime Moshe Rabbeinu lefareish lecha mash omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu b'shas matan Torah zachor es yom ha-shavas la-kadshoy ki sheshes yom ha-sa ha-shamayim es-aretz. This is also a premonition, meaning the Torah is going to tell us, keep the Sabbath like Hashem created the heavens and the earth. When he created the heavens and earth, he rested, right? Well, we need to know that in order to keep that, right? So meaning the creation process is going to be the necessary information to be able to understand what Shabbos is all about. Right? So I need that information for later on. And so much so that the Rashbam even goes on to say at the end of creation, that's why the Genesis 1 and 2 does not describe, Bereshis, Aleph, and Beis, does not talk about the creation of Malachim, and it doesn't describe Ol Gehinnom or Ma'aseh Merkava, right? It doesn't say, explain the spiritual machinations of the world above or below, right? Why? Because he says, Ola Dvarim Sh'anu Ro'im Bo'olam V'Nizkarim Ba'Aseres HaDibrois. If the reason for the existence of the sections of the Torah of Bereshis, of Ma'aseh Bereshis, is to get to Matan Torah, because that's the prerequisite of information, then the Malachim and the and Gehinnom and Ma'aseh Merkava are not necessary for that, so therefore they're not included. Right, so meaning not only is it a necessary prerequisite, but it's the only prerequisite necessary to understand the Aseres HaDibrois on its own terms. Okay, so he's not just doing V'cham Avi Kanan, like a phrase in a pasuk is going to be a premonition. An entire section in the Torah is now the necessary information for later on as well. He's doing the same methodology over here. Another example of this is the Yosef saga. Remember, why is he so important? Why is it so important to the Rashbam at the beginning of Vayeshev? Because that's a new moment in Jewish history. Eile told us Yaakov Yosef. He explains in that same passage we saw beforehand. V'kol ze tzarich Moshe lichtov, Rabbein lichtov, she'al ze ha'chichum b'shivim panim shivim nefesh yodav asechav Mitzrayimah. Because this explains how we get to the next step, which is the 70 souls who come down to Egypt over here. Notice, by the way, he's quoting a pasuk. That pasuk is in Devarim Perek Yud. Look at the full pasuk. B'shivu nefesh yardu avasecha mitzrayimah, this is source 20. V'atah samcha Hashem alakecha kochavei Hashem alarav. Next pasuk. O'v'ahavta Hashem alakecha v'shomarta mishmato v'chukosal mishmato v'mitzvotav kol hayamim. You need to know your history in order to be able to serve him. So again, why is the story here? To explain how we got there so we could understand why we serve him, right? So again, the end is justifying the means as to why the story is a very similar idea. Okay, so just in terms of the methodology of what we've done, we've looked at the Rashbam, we've looked at a few ideas, and again, I want to acknowledge Dr. Abigail Rock, who has a really, really excellent book on this in Magid Press on this topic of the Rashbam. It's just looking at these in terms of the methodology. Number one is the common practice of the time, right? The idea of the shepherds and what shepherds would do those times. The idea of repetition, whether it's Esav or the idea of Yaakov turning to his firstborn. We looked at the other methodologies in terms of solving questions internally. We're based on the Pesukim, the relative size of the moon to the sun, or Yishmael being further away. And the idea of premonitions of the Torah inserting information necessary to be able to understand later. These are general principles in the Rashbam, and many of them will, as we saw, move away from the interpretations of Chazal. What complicates things more, and this is where things get exciting and interesting in a more profound sense, is when it comes to halacha, when it comes to mitzvahs. See, up till now we've been interpreting what's called agada, the narrative of the Torah. The Torah is divided into two sections. Narrative, that's the story, and then mitzvahs, which is what to do. Okay, so what happens when it comes to the to-do sections? Remember the Rashbam had said that the words of Chazal are kenim v'ametziyem, they're true. So does that mean to say that he's going to self-censor himself interpreting the mitzvah section of the Torah? And the answer is no. So how does he live with that? So Rashbam says this in Perek Chof Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, it's not in Vayikra, it's in Shmois. What is Shmois Chof Aleph? What's the word, which parasha are we in? Beginning of Mishpatim, where the Torah starts now moving away from narrative. It's the first major section in the Torah which moves away from narrative and moves towards law, right, to mitzvah. And therefore he says, V'ala mishpatim, yadu v'yavil yavinu v'yodei seichel. So again, his target audience is those who are yodei seichel, those who are looking for intellectual ideas in source 21. Ki kol yoy basi lefaresh halachos af al pi shehem ikar. I'm not explaining the halachos, even though that's the real point of the Torah. Kumo shepirashi b'bereshis, as I explained, we saw that section. You'll find many of the halachic interpretations of the mitzvahs in Rashi, as he does. I'm going to explain the verses according to the way of the land, Derech Eretz. But the halacha is still true. Now, that, again, is something which not everybody's comfortable with. Because how can you live with multiple versions of truth? This is, in postmodern reality, Right? The world has become accustomed to multiple channels. But in truth, usually we assume that true is objectively true to the exclusion of all else, and therefore there's only one interpretation of the psukim. Rashbam is quite avant-garde in this perspective of allowing pshat and drash to coexist at the same time, and not only just coexist, but to formulate the pshat in the face of the drash and live with the two as an adherent to halacha. That's what he's doing. And so he'll do this many, many, many times as well. And therefore, and as an example, like this is the most famous example over here, of the many famous examples, where it says, where this Hebrew bondsman decides that he doesn't want to go free at the Shemitah. He comes back to his master and says, I love my wife, I love my job, I love my master, I don't want to go free. So what do? You take him to the town square and you take his Yigishol Adonov El Amazuzah, and he should serve him forever. Chazal is very unequivocal that forever means until the Yovel, right? Until the Yovel, says the Rashbam. He says, Lo'olam lefi apshat kol yemei chayav. His entire life. Now, by the way, just for me, this is so fascinating. What is the proof the Rashbam marshals for this? This is, to me, is always fascinating. He quotes, K'moy shneim abe Shmuel v'yosho shom ad olam, that Shmuel should live there till ever, which means the entire life. Just a very fascinating point. How old was Shmuel when he dies? The Tanakh tells us very clearly. 52. When was Shmuel brought to the Mishkan? The age? 2. Which means the lo'olam of Shmuel was 50 years. It just happens to be. Now, meaning that was his lo'olam. But nonetheless, the Rashbam's aware of this. It's a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. But nonetheless, the lo'olam over here, now you say to say, wait a second, whoa. It has to be one way or the other. Meaning, when I'm in the realm of Agara, okay, I can understand that the pasuk is conveying the ideology of the moon and the sun and also relative size. I can live with those two. But now I can't. Do you see this? Now I run into a roadblock. Because lo'olam is either eternally for the rest of his life or 50 years, which could be in 3 years' time, by the way, right? Because it won't be 3 years' time. It's probably going to be, another Shemitah cycle, right? But the point is that those are very different. What do you do? Says Rashbam will say, what do you do? Of course, what you do is the Yovel. But what does it mean? Can also mean for the rest of his life. Now we have to understand. So what's the value of that? We're going to put that question on hold for a second. Another example, this is a very famous one for this. In fact, for this interpretation, some would argue, is what warranted the disappearance of the Rashbam from Parashas Bereishis. Right? So in some earlier versions, the Rashbam was not allowed to be printed in Bereishis because of this. Okay, so what does it mean? So it describes, when it describes the day-night cycle, what does the Torah say? Vayikra Elokim la'or yom v'lachoshech kara laila v'yi'erev v'yivoker yom echad. So Hashem creates light, he creates night, and then light and dark, and he calls a day. So we know that in Torah ideology, for most of halachic aspects, except for korbanos or certain other things, how does the day begin? Night. Day begins at night, right? So Shabbos begins at night, Yom Tov begins at night, everything begins at night for most aspects of halacha. And this is pretty clear in the Mishnayos as well. Rashbam says, well, look at this way that Hashem created it. It says he called it light and then dark. So the Rashbam says, it's first light and then dark, as the Torah says it. So you're going to say, well, what about the end of the pasuk, Vayere Vayivoker? So he says, Vayere Vayivoker, Ein Ksiv Kan Vayilayla Vayiyom. It does not use the word night. It uses the word Erev. That's the first time we do it. So we interpret Erev as evening, right? That's how we kind of do the beginning of the night. He says, Ela vayerev, sha'erev yom rishon v'shika or vayiboker. Meaning, erev is the word mixture. What? Arev, right? Which means it's the ending of the day, which is when? At dawn, vayiboker. Right? So meaning, it's the end of the first day going into the next day, which is at sunrise. Bokro shalayla sha'ola amur ha-shachar harei hushlam yom echad min ha-shisha yomim sha'omar ha-kosh baruch ba'aseres ha-dibros achach yizchil yom sheni. So when does the second day of creation begin? In the morning. That's according to Rashbam. Why? Because that's what the psukim say. The way he's understanding it. It says light and then dark. And then right after that it says Vayi'erev Vayiboker. So clearly Erev cannot mean night. Erev means mixture, which means that's the moments of the rising of the sun. Vayi'erev Vayiboker, which is the beginning of the next day. Right? That's the way he's interpreting it. Now you say to yourself, that, if interpreted halachically, is heresy. right? Because that would mean to say that Shabbos would start in the morning, right? So therefore, that's why you'll see people like the Ibn Ezra, by the way, and we'll get to why the Ibn Ezra is so much flummoxed by this and is very upset by this. He writes an entire letter about a dream he had about Shabbos coming to him in a dream to defend Shabbos against the Rashbam. Okay, so meaning people, this Rashbam was at a certain point not printed on the page because of this idea, because it is too dangerous. But notice the Rashbam is not troubled by this, because the Rashbam has already told us that he is able to live with multiple called frequencies of ideas at the same time. And that means to say is he can understand that the Pshuto Shel Mikra means that that day starts in the morning, but of course halachically day starts at night, and those still can coexist. That is the complexity of the Rashbam. And he's therefore not contradicting Chazal. He is therefore living with a multiple reality existence. So you say to yourself, like,
definition differently. Tfilas Arvis, obviously. It's
yes.
Night. So, according to yourself,
yes,
it's the morning.
Yes, 100%. Meaning, oh, and now, of course, our practice is reflective of, right, meaning our language is reflecting of the halacha. Now, by the way, just notice the Rashbam is willing as well in certain areas in the Torah to actually desist. So Rashbam, as an example, we'll say in the beginning of Parshas Tazria, Adam Kiyab Abisarai, he goes, says, listen to this, Rashbam. He says, Kol ha-parshias, parshias nige Adam v'nige begodim, in Psalms 27, nige batim, umaros sehem, v'cheshpon saskorim, v'asaros, levonos, v'asara shachon v'atzahov. All the things, the hair, the different colors, the houses, the locking ups, the things. Ein lonu el, ein lonu achar pirushoi shel mikro klum. I'm going to no longer interpret here. There's no pshutoi in this area. Because this is simply not reflecting the norms that is well called human logic interpretive. So he will say, when it comes to an introduction of a new area of ideas, which is the spiritual disease of leprosy, I'm not going to tell you based on the reality I think and conjure up, because it was not conjured up based on human intellect. This is not Yaakov Avinu talking to his son. This is a new idea being introduced, and therefore Chazal, the only interpretation, therefore the Rashbam says, I will, and he doesn't comment on Tazria, okay, because this as well. So this is important to understand the places where he stops, but when it comes to law and halacha, the Rashbam will still give multiple interpretations which can coexist, even though seemingly logically would actually be in contradiction as well. So you say to yourself, and this is the most critical issue, so what is the value of that? What is the value of having a pshat which exists independently of the halacha? Like, if you're willing to admit that v'avodah l'olam means till the yovel, then what is the value of telling me l'olam all his life? What is the value of giving an interpretation which is independent of this? And this, there are books written on this particular topic as well. I'm just going to point out a couple observations which are made, and I don't want to be to be left sort of. There are those who get this is a very sensitive topic, so I want to make sure that there's more a study on that on this as well. One idea is I think the most basic is that the two actually do interact with each other. So for instance, for the lo olam idea, the lo olam idea is that this person essentially is being punished for life. This person wanted to be a servant to another master. So Hashem says to him, you're going to be for the rest of your life. Now, you know, in normative practice, you're going to be set free. But understand that this is not this is sort of a life sentence ideologically, even though, right, there's a term limit. Right, so that the two can work together. Meaning the Torah wants you to understand you should be a slave forever. But there's, of course, a legal limit, right? So, but similarly, the most famous of all of these divergences between Pshat and Drash is Leitani Mishpatim, which is Ayin Tachas Ayin, an eye for an eye, right? And Chazal, unequivocally, in Baba Kama, understand this means to say Ayin is referring to Mammon. It's remuneration. It's not referring to what you see the law that goes on in some of these Arabic countries still today. So that means to say that was a reinterpretation. Why does the Torah then convey to us in this complex way? I'd like to just quote Rav Soloveitchik, and I mentioned this yesterday actually in the Drash. Rav Soloveitchik in his speech which he gave in 1956 in Yiddish in the Lamport Auditorium called Odi Dofek, which was later translated into Hebrew and later translated into English. And in it, he describes, I did not put this in the sources, but he says, The sixth knock of HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon the creation of the state of Israel was that for the first time the annals of our exiled divine province has amazed our enemies with the astounding discovery that Jewish blood is not cheap. If the anti-Semites describe this phenomenon as being an eye for an eye, we will agree with them. If we want to courageously defend our continued national and historical existence, we must, from time to time, interpret the verse, an eye for an eye, literally. So many eyes were lost in the course of our bitter exile when we did not repay hurt for hurt. The time has come for us to fulfill the simple meaning of an eye for an eye. Of course, I am sure everyone recognizes that I'm an adherent to the oral law. And from my perspective, there's no doubt that the verse refers to monetary restitution as defined by halacha. That's exactly our problem, right? That's exactly the space of our problem. He says as follows, Rav Soloveitchik, however, with respect to the Mufti and Nasser, 1950s, I demand that we interpret the verse of the in accordance with the literal meaning, the taking of an actual eye. Pay no attention to the saccharine suggestions of known assimilationists and some of Jewish socialists who stand pat in their rebelliousness and think they are living in Bialystok, Brest-Litovsk, and Minsk of the New Year 1905 and openly declare that revenge is forbidden to the Jewish people in any place, at any time, under all circumstances. Vanity of vanities. Revenge is forbidden when it is pointless. But if one is aroused thereby to self-defense, it is the most elementary right of a man to take his revenge. This is obviously very timely, but Rav Soloveitchik is saying essentially, so why did the Torah say ayin tachas ayin? Because there is a value which is being conveyed, even though halachically, normatively, that is not the way we're going to act as well, right? You understand? So there exists the space for that as well. Similarly, there is a much longer discussion of this. Rav Amnon Bazak has a book called Ad HaYom HaZeh, which is a very complex and excellently written sefer. It's Ad HaYom HaZeh, which is one of the most complex phrases in Tanakh. when we get to the Ibn Ezra, we'll see why. But in it, he in the section of Agada and Pshat, Midrash Agada, Midrash Halacha and Pshat, he makes observation based on the Dor Revi'i, which is his introduction to Chulin, based on the letters of Rav Kook, based on the Yerushalmi, that in a certain sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu left the Torah ambiguous in the way it was taught, because it was open to the interpretations of the ages because of its eternality, which means, just to appreciate this, the Torah is limited by any interpretation, so much so that even the vowels and even the cantillation are an interpretation, right? Which is why the Torah is absent of those, because those already itself are one-level interpretation, which means the Torah is going to be uninterpreted because it will have multiple expressions throughout the course of a very complex reality of human existence. So much so, suggests the Dor Revi'i in his introduction to Chulin, is that it could have been that at the times that the Torah was given, that ayin tachas ayin, as interpreted in normative practice, was literal, which means that was what society understood then. But the Sanhedrin understood, and Chazal understood, as times changed, that Allah would not be that, which means they voted and they interpreted unilaterally that this is going to mean mammon, and that's what it became. Now, no, this is obviously you can understand the danger in such interpretation of the change of halacha, which is why when the Rambam talks about this, when Rav Kook talks about this, they say it's only at the hands of Sanhedrin to interpret halachic reality. But that means to say that the Torah itself gave the space for a continuum. So much so the Gemara Yerushalmi says that Moshe Rabbeinu was asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do we do in this case, guilty or innocent? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Acharei Rabim Lahatos, which means Hashem says, I'm giving you the qualified body of leadership of Torah interpretation, the license to interpret and interpret it as it will be fit. Now, since the Sanhedrin disappeared, we've lost that license to a large degree. We're living with a more static Torah, which is applying to different circumstances. But that means to say that there was a space that existed that was also the possibility of multiple meanings even in normative practice. That's another example. Now, folks, what I just said over here is so complex. And so I want to say what the question is for last, because I know I'm really at time. I want to just highlight really three very, very profound interpretations of the Rashbam, which shift, and then we're going to close with this. Just to appreciate, this methodology leads us to completely different ways of reading the Torah in general. Okay, the Rashbam is not bothered by the fact that he is differing from Chazal both in Agada and Halacha, and he is not disagreeing with them, as we'll see that Ibn Ezra does. Rather, the Rashbam is agreeing and adding. Okay, But when it comes to this, he is going to now yield very, very profound interpretations in the Torah, which we've yet not seen. As an example, Vayhi acharei devarim ha'ele, the beginning of the parasha of Akedah, after these matters, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested Avraham Avinu. What was after these matters? Rashi quotes many Midrash Chazal, the Satan Yishmael, the Satan was testing him. Yishmael and Yitzchak had a conversation about whose sacrifice is greater, says the Rashbam. The immediately preceding thing, we learned this last week, was the alliance made by Avimelech and Avraham Avinu, an intergenerational, three-generational pact, says the Rashbam. Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, you think you can secure the future of your children and your grandchildren by making an alliance with your neighbor who needs you more than you need him? Right? He says, you're not guaranteed that your children are going to even live. Take him up and slaughter him on the mountain, which means you are being punished for thinking you can rely on a human being for a sense of security. That's the way the Rashbam understands it. And if you trace this Rashbam further, it is a profound reading of Torah, because why was that Yerushalayim was not able to be conquered? According to many interpretations, the Radak explains later on in Chazal, is because they had these Ivrim and Pesachim. What are Ivrim and Pesachim? The one interpretation of that is they had images of Yitzchak and Yaakov, Iver and Pesach. Iver was Yitzchak who couldn't see, Pesach was Yaakov who couldn't walk. And they had images of them because the intergenerational alliance of peace between Abraham and this group of Philistines was in fact for three generations, and a grandson of Avimelech still existed at the time of the times of Avimelech, which now therefore there was still within the statutes of limitations of this alliance, which is why they couldn't do it. So much so that even at the beginning of Bishalach, they wouldn't go through Gaza, right? What does it mean, ki karavu? Because it's close. No, that should be the reason why they should go through it. What does it mean they didn't enter Israel through Gaza? They went down the peninsula into Sinai. As most basic understanding is, this is the Mechilta adds, is because ki karav shvuah soshel Avimelech. They still had an alliance in Gaza. They couldn't go through Gaza, which is why they went down to the Red Sea. Right, which means to say the shadow of Ibn Ezra has far-reaching ramifications in the way you read Jewish history. Another example of this it describes that Yaakov Avinu is left alone that night, and he struggles with the speck to the angel of Esav. Why is he alone? Why is Yaakov Avinu alone? Wasn't he with his family that night? Like he was like, right, he was preparing the camps and the whole thing. Well, why is he alone? Rashi tells us, he went back over the river to get the Pachim Tanim. That's how we all interpret it. He left the small things mikan, and you hear from Yah that tzaddikim have a great value on their assets. They don't just like, it's not consumerism. They wouldn't just like, you know, buy a replacement. He went to go back to get the Tupperware containers, right? That's why Rashi understands and says based on Chazal. Says to Ibn Rashbam, you know why he's alone? He went back across the river because he was fleeing. That's what Rashbam says, right? Not introducing Chazal. He was fleeing. He was scared. That's, don't believe me, look at Psalm 32. But Moshe Yaakov al-Adok l'amar, Shevir is kol asher loy, Shaloi hoya oid la'avor elohu, Levadev v'rotzo la'avor acharem, Kedei livrach derech acheres, Shaloi yifkushu Esav. He said, there's too much is at stake. I have my family here. We have to leave. It's not worth meeting him. We'll go away. We'll be refugees, but let's not meet him. Now, put that into the context now of the angel. So why did the angel meet Yaakov according to the Rashbam now? The angel had to meet him that night. Like, well, why was the angel Esav there that night? Like, meaning, like, why was that necessary? Right, so you say maybe it's a premonition for the next day. According to the Rashbam, why? Because if you want to run away from Esav, you're going to meet Esav. Yeah, so that's what's really happening now. I mean, what you're running away from is what you're going to meet as you're running away. And therefore, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's observation is, what does he say in the morning when he's now holding this angel in a lock, right? It says, please send me off because the Ola HaShachar, the dawn is coming. What does he say? Lo Yashlechecha Ki Im Berachtani. I won't let you go until you've blessed me. Jonathan Sachs said, I don't know where he wrote this down, but I remember hearing him say this when he was in YU a few years ago. He says, Lo Yashlechecha, I will not let go of my adversity Ki Im Berachtani until I've found the blessing within you, until you've given me the blessing of the adversity. Which means, from the beginning of the night, Yaakov's view of adversity is something to be to flee from. At the end of the night, he won't let go of adversity until he receives blessing in it. Which means the transition, the psychological transition of Yaakov and his relationship to adversity has changed throughout the night. But you can only understand that if you understand the Rashbam. Another very, very famous Rashbam, and again, these shift the entire reality. Is the pasuk says in this is our last interpretation, in source 33, the Bereishis, Yosef is coming to visit his brothers. They don't like him because there's many, many reasons why not, but they decide they want to kill him. They decide not to kill him. They throw him into a pit. And we told, Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim, vayimshechu vayalu es Yosef min abor, vayimkuru es Yosef leishmaelim be'esrim, kase vayivu es Yosef mitzrayma. And they took him out and sold him, and daddy went to Egypt. Who sold him? So, the brothers sold Yosef, right? That's why the Asarei Oruga Malchus, the whole thing, right? We know who sold Yosef, right? But if you want to just follow language for a second, what happens in a sentence when you have a proper noun and then you have a pronoun afterwards, right? So Jack built the building and he went to the marketplace. Who went to the marketplace? Jack, right? Because you have a pronoun following a proper noun, so it refers backwards. Let's do that for the pasuk Lahavdil. It says, Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim. Midianite traders came. By the way, so what's happening right now? Just understand, where are the brothers? They're eating right now, right? Because they put him in the pit, they're eating. The Midianite merchants are coming. Vayimshechu vayalu es Yosef in Abor. And they pulled him out of the pit. Who's they? The only other proper noun, the only other identified party in this pasuk at this point in time is the Midianite merchants, which means they pulled Yosef out of the pit. And Vayimkur es Yosef now to a different group, which means to Arab traders, Yishmaelites, which means there were two separate sets of traders, and the brothers weren't even aware of this going on, according to Rashbam, which means their brothers did not sell Yosef. Now, why they held accountable is because they put him in the pit, which they put him in a situation which enabled this all to happen. But according to Rashbam, he is now uncoupled, in a certain sense, the sale from the brothers of Yosef directly. Right, which is a profound perspective of understanding this. If you just look at the psukim, we're taking a step back from Chazal's interpretation of it for a second. And this opens up a new vista of interpretation, a new vista of perspective. Again, simple observations lead to profoundly different ways of understanding things as well. The third example of this. I'd like to close with an observation made by Dr. Nachama Leibowitz. Somebody asked Dr. Leibowitz, how should we teach our children? Like, meaning, there's so many different parashanim. How should we teach our children Torah and Tanakh? Like it's so difficult. What is the best way to do it? And she said the following observation. When they are young, teach them Rashi and Midrash. And a lot of times, certainly in the Midrash Agada, the children have an easier grasp on, we'll call it, you know, very tangible, stories, the subtext which Rashi often provides for the text. So when they become more critical thinkers as teenagers, then introduce Rashbam, right? So meaning to say, some people are only this way and only that way. And Dr. Leibowitz was careful enough to appreciate that there's a development even in ourselves as we develop Oave Seichel, as the Rashbam understands it, and there's a development of appreciation. What's the beauty of the Rashbam is his ability to be able to hold multiple truths in stasis at the same time and not be threatened by the fact that they coexist. That's the remarkable thing of the Rashbam, which now leads us next week, Be'ezra Hashem, to Ibn Ezra, who does not live with that reality. Thank you so much for the time, everybody. Very, very fascinating idea. Yes.